Right, welcome back to the Me, Myself, and Hopefully You podcast. This week, I sit down with the woman who threw everything away at the beginning of the first lockdown with barely enough to cover her next mortgage payment to set up her own personal branding agency. We discuss how Clout has gone on to be one of the most recognized names in the personal branding space and is currently one of the fastest growing startups in London. We also discuss WAG culture and being the wife of an ex-professional footballer, mental health after her ex-husband attempted to take his own life, and what she believes is the future of the world of work. This is a much more personal podcast episode with my guest this week. So if you're looking for personal branding tips or LinkedIn tips, then my guest has done many, many podcast episodes discussing all of this. I wanted to find out what makes my guest tick, basically. I wanted to find out why so many people are throwing themselves at her feet to get an opportunity to work with her, so much so that one person even delivered 12 donut time donuts to her office, six donut time donuts to her office, which is very, very expensive. And someone else even hacked her Linktree, which is mental. I don't even know if that's legal, to be honest. I'm surprised she hasn't called the police. But anyway, people are throwing themselves at her, and I wanted to find out why. So without further ado, my guest at this time, it is Amelia Sordell. So Amelia, I'm going to get straight into it. We're going to start off with some quick fire questions just to sort of get you into it. I know it's been a bit of a chaotic day so far. Well, these quick fire questions, you've only got 90 seconds to answer them. And I know you like quick long answers, but you've got 90 seconds to answer 20 quick fire questions. Are you ready, Amelia?
Jesus Christ, yeah, I'll try.
Right, some of them are deep, but some of them are a little bit more simple. Right, okay. All right, 3, 2, 1. Amelia, do you prefer sweet or savoury?
Sweet.
Apple juice or orange juice?
Neither, don't like juice.
Wow, last thing that you bought?
Lunch. I bought a Joe and the Juice, Prince of Green Juice, and a gluten-free, because I have IBS, avocado.
Very nice. Best advice you've ever received?
Never take criticism from someone you wouldn't accept advice from.
Love that. What's your biggest regret?
Have none.
Fair play. What's the most valuable item you own?
My phone, because I run my business from it.
What's the most important thing to you?
My kids.
What's the meaning of life?
Happiness.
What's the best thing about your job?
Everything. It's fucking chaotic, complex.
Love
amazing.
It. Who's your biggest role model?
My biggest role model, God. The version of me in 10 years' time.
Nice. You could only follow one social media account. Which one would it be?
Gary V.
Sick. One thing you'd change about the world?
I just want everyone to be 1% kinder. If we were all 1% kinder, imagine the impact we'd have.
What did your parents teach you that you want to pass on to your children?
To tolerate and respect other people's opinions. We used to have a daily debate around the dinner table where my dad would just murder our opinions, but he would respect our right to have one. And that lesson has been, as I'm sure you can imagine, having built a personal branding agency, instrumental, not just in my business and my career, but also in my life.
Yeah, no, 100%. We'll talk about that later. What's the biggest mental health tip that you've got?
Stop doing things to impress other people and focus on what makes you happy.
What's the first thing you'd do if you won the lottery?
I would give as many people as I possibly could a life-changing amount of money.
Sick. If you could be someone else for a day, who would you be?
No one. I love my life.
All right. What gets you excited about your life then?
Everything. I love the fact that I get to wake up every day and have the gift of some beautiful eyes, that I get to look at things. I love that I can hear things. I love that I can use my body to walk and to get places. I love that I get to build a life that I can do something that I enjoy and get paid money to do it. I love that I'm a mum. I just love life. I love it.
And this is what I love about you, Amelia, your optimism. If you could know one piece of information about anything in the world, past, present or future, what would it be? But it can't be something like knowing the lottery numbers.
If I could know something about the future, I wouldn't want to know what the future is. Why the fuck would you want to know what the future is? The whole joy of life comes from living in the journey and the plot. I don't want to know what the ending is. I'm just living it for the plot.
So it could be anything past or present. You wouldn't know anything about the past?
No.
Nope. All right, and what's the most important question of all? Pineapple and pizza, yes or no?
No, God.
No. I'm disappointed, Amelia. You're disappointed.
Well,
me right
my
again.
Daughter's favorite pizza type, right? My parents live in Italy 6 months out of the year. They're fluent in Italian. If they saw me put pineapple on a pizza, I'd be disinherited.
Listen, the Italians can get some things wrong, and that is the one thing that they've got wrong. Pineapple deserves on pizza. It's a great innovation. Anyway, right, that was brilliant. So I've done a lot of research on you over the last 6 months. I basically just stalked your entire profile. I've watched like 8 or 9 podcasts that you've been on. And the annoying thing is, having watched all these podcasts, is one, I'm a bit annoyed listening to your voice now. No, I'm joking, I'm not. But the annoying thing is that everyone asks the questions that I wanted to ask, right? About personal branding, what is it? How can students get involved? And I feel like that's just boring. If anyone wants to know that information, they can find it on another podcast. I want to focus on the personal side of the personal branding with Amelia Sordell, right? I want to get to the crux of who you are, right? And how you got to being who you are right now, okay? So, Amelia, tell me about what was your sort of high school and before university experience like? What kind of student were you and what were your aspirations at the time?
What kind of student was I? An unwilling one? I didn't want to go to university. I went because I thought it was the right thing to do because it made my parents happy. And actually what ended up happening, I have no regrets, right? As I said earlier, I don't regret anything, but because that experience has given me a lot of life lessons that has enabled me to live the life I live and love now. But I learned nothing from university. I didn't have the social life that people have at university. I didn't get the skills that I thought I was going to get at university. I actually think it was a total waste of my time and money, if I'm honest, because obviously I had to pay for my degree. But I just didn't enjoy it. And also, I think if I can find any positives in it, university in itself, the only gift it gave me was time to figure out who I was, what I wanted, what I did and didn't like. It gave me the opportunity to go and work. I was that kid that was never in lectures. I didn't go to one single lecture in my final year, not a single one.
And you still got a 2-1.
Yeah, got 2-1. But I did 4 internships. I learned more in those internships, in those 8-week internships, than I had in the entire degree. And so when I got to the end of that learning period, I was like, well, what a waste of time. And so obviously people think I've got a vendetta against university. I don't have a vendetta against university. I have a vendetta against education systems that are broken and education system that I was delivered both at school and university is fundamentally broken.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that I'm passionate about as well is sort of the education system as well. Even though I'm currently at university, I do feel like there's so much more room to improvement. What do you think? Like, if you could change the education system, what would it look like under Amelia Sordell government?
Amelia Sordell government would be one that no one would ever want to be under because I make decisions so fucking quickly without thinking about what the
Do you want the facts? No, I don't want the facts. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, this is what's happening. And once I made a decision, it's happening. So I'd be a terrible prime minister. No, but I think actually the education system where it goes fundamentally wrong is it's 10 years behind both school and university. Because how can you possibly expect to stay up to date when you're delivering curriculum? The curriculum would need to change every 2 days if it was going to be up to date. But I actually think a more modern and more practical way to learn, if you like, is, you know, you leave school, you go to university for a year and you do a foundation year and then you go into the workforce and then maybe you come back in 4 years' time and do another 6 months and then you go back into work and then you do another 6 months. And it's like this continual, whether it's virtual, in person, this continual learning because number one, you can't possibly expect someone to get in the States $350,000 into debt and not give them the skills that money that they've paid should give them. But two, like university is setting people up for failure. Like we're teaching children that if you want a good job, you go to university. University does not guarantee you a good job. If anything, it's just you're getting yourself in debt. So unless you want to go and be a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer or something that requires you to go and learn the fundamental basics of what it is to do that job, in its current format, it just doesn't work. And if you ask, I will shut the fuck up about the education system being broken when you can show me a single adult that's using skills, aside from the professions I just mentioned, single adult who's using skills they learned at the university in real life. It just doesn't happen. What everyone says is what I said, which is, oh, I loved university. And I go, why? Oh, because I had a social life.
I think that's how I felt for a long time now, especially having spoken to so many people on the podcast, people who are really successful. We speak about education. I've said that exact same thing. It should be, if you could stop, if
a year at uni was a qualification. Half the people who get a degree will have dropped out by the end of the year. The only reason people stay on is because a year is, it'll be a wasted year if they leave. So they carry it on. And I 100% agree with you on that. Like, what you learn at university, when you go, the minute you go into work, it's no longer applied. It doesn't make sense. I saw your recent LinkedIn post about how all jobs require a degree these days, even though there's no point. Most jobs don't even need the degree, but because they know that everyone's got one, might as well just whack it in there.
Yeah, and I also think it's a way, this whole societal expectation that people have degrees, and equally to your point about my post today was, I think I said, I do not believe that employers should be allowed to ask for a degree if the job that they're hiring for doesn't require one. And I believe that because it's a way of qualifying people out of a process as opposed to qualifying them into a process. We have a drastically low number of candidates available to us as employers who are highly skilled and have good attitude. Why the fuck would you want to make that more complicated? Like, I know, like, half of the team here haven't gone to university. They're all excellent. I don't give a shit whether someone has a degree or not. It just shows that you went somewhere for 3 years. Well done. Yeah. Congrats.
Doesn't make you special. 100%. So when we were doing the quick fire questions, you spoke about your dad and how he would destroy sort of your arguments on the table. Tell me a bit more about that.
He still does on a daily,
Give me an example where you were like, bloody hell, dad, that's a bit harsh. Or you were like, jeez, like your mind was just blown away by his counter argument.
It's hard to think of one off the top of my head, you know. We have so many discussions, Tarek, about politics, about religion, about...
I've got very strong opinions about motherhood, about being a working mum, and about the gender, you know, pay gap and gender inequality, I should say, and all these things. Opinions which you probably would not expect from me. I think a lot of people see my content and expect me to be, you know, probably very like, I'm a female entrepreneur and like, you know, I like pink boss bitch shit. And I'm the total opposite of that. I'm very standing up there with Sheryl Sandberg, although I probably shouldn't mention her in a minute because she's in a bit of hot water. But
yeah, I was going to say.
Like, lean in is my vibe. Put the ladder back down is my vibe. Don't put me in a gender box. It's got nothing fucking to do with my career vibe. I talk about all those things with him. And if he disagrees with me, he fucking tells me. Like, and he will make really compelling arguments. I still might not agree with his arguments, but the beautiful thing about having those discussions and learning to respect other people's perspectives and discussing things without getting angry is that you widen your knowledge, you widen your perspective, and you widen your ability to be able to consider how your thoughts, actions, and opinions impact other people. And even if you still believe in those thoughts, opinions, and actions, knowing how it impacts other people just makes you a much better human. And it certainly served me in my life, definitely served me in my career. I mean, God, I built a whole business on opinion, right? And I really do think we've got tolerance for other people's opinions in this country, and particularly in the US. It's so polarizing. Like, we live in a world where everyone's like, I don't like labels, I don't want to be labeled, and yet we are so fucking black and white. It's either you're for or against, you're yes or no, you're this, you're that. And it's like, life isn't that way. And if we all just started thinking about everything in a more human and pragmatic way and stopped thinking that just because we have an opinion means it's fact, we'll be better off. And on that point, it's kind of self-defamatory a little bit, but I think it all stems from social media. Like, we follow these people and we like this content and we engage with these video pieces. And it just confirms our confirmation bias, right? It's confirmation bias. We are filling our feeds with stuff that we agree with, that we believe that it's fact, which is why you see all this bullshit about, you know, COVID-19 or this bullshit about every other thing that's going on in the world that is opinion, not fact. But 50% of the population believe it's fact because all they do is follow people on social media who's perpetuating that thought. Here's an idea. Start following people that you don't agree with. Start following Donald Trump. Start following, you know, the anti this, that, and the other. If you're, you know, pro-life, go and follow some, pro-choice. Learn from other people because that's the only way that you're going to grow.
100%. Like, I remember I once put on my story a picture of me listening to Katie Hopkins speaking at the UKIP conference.
Who, by the way, is really, really good to follow on social media.
Katie Hopkins.
I actually think she is one of the most... She, Donald Trump, you know, Candace Owens, people like that. You need to expose yourself to people that you don't agree with. Even if you think fundamentally, ethically, morally, they're corrupt, whatever you want to say, you have to expose yourself to those ideas. Because how do you even know that your idea is right if you don't?
I think for me, I was quite lucky. Like, let's say, for example, if a white straight man was to post a picture of him watching Katie Hopkins, he'd immediately be bombarded with, oh, you're this, you're that. Because I think it would have been shocking when people sort of like, he's a Muslim brown guy, child of immigrants. Why the hell is he watching Katie Hopkins? And it's I don't, have you ever watched the Daryl Davis TED Talk? Do you know who that is? So Daryl Davis is a guy who is a black man and he became friends with KKK members.
Yes, I know exactly. And they made a film about him, didn't they?
Yeah, and it's incredible. Yeah, like, so, Black Klansmen, they sort of based on his life. Yeah. But I would highly recommend anyone to watch the Daryl Davis TED Talk. It completely changes your perspective on actually sitting down. Like, he's converted over 200 people that were part of the KKK. Like, that's mad. He's changed their lives purely by being a nice guy and sitting down and listening to what they had to say. So I completely agree with you there. So how do you feel like that's impacted sort of you as an entrepreneur? Like, you're more open to ideas. What do you feel like that's done for you? Do you feel like it's helped you at all in business?
Yeah, massively. I mean, look, we work with people from, you know, startup founders to between 150 CEOs, and they've all got very different opinions, some of which I don't agree with. Like, but understanding how to tell those stories, can't do that without having perspective. You can't do that without having like a 360 lens on everything, right? Like, I can't allow my opinion to impact the success of my client's personal brand, right? Because that's what I do. I build personal brands. Because why would I want to? Why would I want to force my opinion and my thought process down someone else's throat and make them like me? That defeats the entire point of what we're trying to do here, which is to build authentic, scalable reputation. It's definitely helped me, certainly from a business sense. You know, my whole business is built on having strong opinions and building the reputations around it. But as a human being, like, you know, most politically, it's meant that I can have really interesting conversations with my team. It's meant that I've been able to hire like really for diversity of thought, not just saying hiring for diversity of thought. You know, everyone in this room, the thing that bonds us together is that we are joined together in this mission to get clout to where we want it to be, right? But fundamentally, we're all so different. We see things different ways. We have different backgrounds, different, you know, we're born in different countries. I don't think there is any downside to considering someone else's opinion, and perspective is everything.
100%. So we're going to take a little, like, complete detour now, because we've gone some sort of talking a little bit about politics. But going back to sort of the personal side, and we can talk about this if you want. If not, I'll edit it out. I want to ask you...
Things off the table, Tarot, you go for it.
Sick, right. So I want to ask, you got married at a very young age, and you got married to a professional footballer.
I did.
So you were involved in that WAG culture life, right? What was your experience of that as someone who was there, who was, you know, especially at a time, so it was around 2013, 2016, right, at a time when, you know, the wives and girlfriends were basically being put on in front of newspapers. You know, we had the 2012 World Cup where they all went to where the England players were, all that sort of. What was your experience of that, and how did you feel throughout that time?
It's interesting, you know, because I've still got friends who are in that, still married to their partners and all that good stuff. There is like a public perception that the partners of professional athletes are in some way gold diggers, or they're a specific type of woman who's after a specific type of thing. And in my experience, 99.999% of that is factually incorrect. most of the women that I've met and engaged with are hardworking, employed or run their own business, mums, like just fucking bosses. And they don't get any fucking credit because what? Their partner kicks a fucking pigskin around a pitch? Like it's sexism at the highest degree. I don't see a single fucking person talking about the boyfriends and husbands of professional athletes. I don't see anyone dogging out Serena Williams' husband or talking about Naomi Osaka's partner.
You don't even know who they are sometimes.
Exactly. No one knew who I was. But yeah, I still got the comments of, oh, you wouldn't touch your ex-husband with a barge pole if you didn't play football. It's like, not being funny. I did this myself. Like, I built my career myself. He had nothing to do with this. And actually, when he met me, I had more cash than him. So,
jeez, you know what I mean? Like,
the perception is that if you marry a, and it's disrespectful to the player too, right? Because they're just saying, well, oh, you're only, or the only thing you're good for is playing football, making money. Not considering that person's actually smart and funny and loving and interesting and all those things. Yeah, the reputation is shit. And I fought against it my entire marriage. And I got to a point after I had kids where I was just like, why do I fucking care what people think about me? I seriously couldn't give two shits. And it was actually in that sort of moment that I then sort of decided, actually, I want to start my own business and I want to get divorced and like, all these things. And it was kind of maybe an existential crisis of sorts. But yeah, it's not a nice industry. The fans can be brutal, misguidedly brutal. You know, if a player misses, you know, that it misses a goal or doesn't play, doesn't perform, like the mental health implications that can have on players is wild. And the abuse that the partners get is just disgusting, to be honest. But yeah, look, the perception's crap, but most of it's not true. And yeah, you definitely have those like influencer, Love Islander vibe chicks that come and go, but they're not the ones that you end up hanging out with, because why would you want to?
Do you feel like, I mean, you said you still got sort of friends that are, you know, still with their partners. Do you feel like that situation has improved or has it gotten worse with social media becoming such a big
thing? I think once you have children, you're kind of then you're like accepted.
All right. So when you fulfill the gender stereotype, that's when you're like, oh, yeah, okay.
When you fulfill the gender stereotype of you are a woman, you must have babies. You're all of a sudden like, oh, yeah, you're a wholesome girl. But before that, you were the slag that was banging the footballer because you didn't have any babies yet. So...
Well, Colleen Rooney is the perfect example. Before she had kids, she was like slated constantly. And now if you actually look at like how people, she's like, oh, she's so good. She's so loyal.
Love her.
Yeah.
She's darling. She's like the son's darling.
Yeah. Which I'm sure she's a nice woman. I don't know. Carrying on with sort of your relationship, your obviously Marvin Sordell was your husband. And he had some mental health issues. In 2013, he attempted to commit suicide. What was that experience like for you then? And sort of your perspective on things at the time. I know you've sort of touched on it, how fans are brutal. But the whole process of that, what was that like?
So I prefer to say take his own life, because suicide actually, is the word, is in reference to the law, which... It's illegal to take your own life.
Oh, okay, okay.
Commit suicide is like to commit a crime. But yeah, he did. God, it was a very trying and challenging time. The weirdest part about all of it is I was the only one that knew, because the nature of football is that if you even have like a sniff of weakness, you get dropped from the team. And so it was like our dirty little secret that he was depressed and that he needed all this help. And there were times where I literally would physically, like I found, you know, his therapist, I would physically drive him to the appointment so that he would go to see the psychiatrist. And after a couple of weeks of, you know, these treatments with this person, she suggested that he should go to an inpatient facility because she was worried about his safety to himself. And he said, no, I can't do that. Like, you know, he was playing at Bolton at the time, who were Premier League or had just been dropped down to the Championship, but by all intents and purposes were a Premier League club. And somehow the chairman of the club, who is now deceased, so, you know, can't defend himself in me saying this, but this is the facts as I know it, seeing as I lived it and heard it and was part of all these phone conversations. The chairman of the club got hold of Marvin's doctor's records that had this recommendation that he should go to the Priory, and said, you got to be fucking joking. Like, absolutely not. If you do that, you're done. Your career's over. Like, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I mean, there's many points to that that are shocking. I think the most shocking part of that is, where the fuck did he get the records from?
Mm.
Because they're confidential. So how did he know that? So either the club doctor fucked up, or the chairman thought he was just above confidentiality and went in and went digging for something. Anyway, because of that, obviously, he didn't seek inpatient treatment, and then he tried to take his life not too long after that. The lack of compassion, the lack of care, the lack of empathy, the lack of general humanity was really shocking to me, because I'd come from a corporate background. I'd worked, you know, I was like, why don't you speak to HR? And Marvin was like, what do you mean HR? And I was like, HR? He said, I don't fucking have that. Like, there is no, it's like the Wild West. Mm. You can do whatever you want. And I think it's still like that. I think it's better. I don't think it's great. I think, you know, again, like you said, I've got friends that are still in that. They have all these issues. They have mental health problems as well, but they're so terrified of being dropped or, you know, not making it back into the team. They just don't say anything. And so they just suffer through it. So it's no fucking surprise that when, you know, players retire, they end up with mental health issues, drug addiction, you know, alcohol abuse, you know, attempted suicide, you know, as you said, like taking your own life, divorce. I think something like 2/3 of every footballer that retire, they get divorced within the first 3 years. Like, the industry is gross, like, for lack of a better word, it's gross. And I think the main issue is that people, fans, coaches, managers, they see these players as like an entity. It's like an asset, right? You've got to look after that asset physically.
Well, they cost millions, that's the thing.
Yeah, what they fail to recognize is, unless that asset could be at its peak performance physically, that asset's mental state is not there, they will never perform on the pitch. And so they'll treat a ACL injury, they'll treat a hamstring injury, they'll treat a, you know, a niggly toe or ankle or whatever, they'll give you all that stuff. But if you need therapy, or you need support, or you need antidepressants, or you need a bit of, like, whatever, don't be ridiculous. The dumbest attitude I've ever heard. But yeah, that's football.
Well, I actually watched, I think this is a video from years ago where Marvin spoke about how without you, he doesn't know whether he'd still be here. He said that, again, it was just a few years ago. What were your feelings in it? Especially at a time where, you know, mental health wasn't spoken about as much as it is now. Like, what were you, because you did you have anyone to speak to about it?
No.
Or was it just something that you were doing off the cuff, almost, like you were just sort of trying to support him as much as possible?
I think the thing is, like, I recognized it pretty fast because I had mental health issues. I've had anxiety for as long as I can remember, which stems from a childhood trauma. And that manifested itself in many different ways, from insomnia to not diagnosed OCD, but symptoms of OCD in bulimia. I was severely bulimic for quite some time. And so I recognized the signs of him not potentially being 100% okay. But because of the predicament, for lack of a better word, we were in that he was a, in many ways, well-known public figure whose mental health issues could potentially ruin his chances of, you know, being in the team, or like XYZ, whatever it is. I couldn't tell anyone. I couldn't even tell my friends. I couldn't tell my family, because God forbid it got out that this guy was seeing a psychotherapist. Like, that could be it, right? So I didn't tell anyone. It wasn't until many, many years later that he finally was like, I need to talk about this, that I was like, yeah, okay, cool, I can talk about it too now. But I think a lot of people don't realize the impact that living and being with someone with mental health issues has on the people around them.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking, yeah.
Incredibly draining. It sounds really selfish saying this, but it's incredibly draining. And especially for someone, I'm very high energy and I get my energy from other people. And I love that you said, like, you're positive. I'm just very, very maybe naively positive, but it makes me feel good. So, you know, whatever. And to be around an energy, again, he can't help it. Like it's a mental health disease. Like it's an issue, right? He can't stop it from being that way. It's not a choice. But to be around that constantly, it was a lot. But you know, figured it out, moved on. So yeah.
And he seems to be doing very well for himself with the production company. You're smashing it as well. It seems to go
I think he's happy. I think he's happy now.
Yeah.
I don't think that stuff ever goes away. I think he will live with that for the rest of his life. But learning to live with it, I think, is
key. Yeah. No, I like you were saying, I wanted to ask because no one ever has that conversation of what's it like for people that are around this person. And particularly for you, you were in a position where you couldn't tell anyone. So you had no support as well. And again, like you said, it does sound selfish because in that scenario, you're not the most important person. He is, or the person suffering with mental health is. But you're still important. And I feel like that's a conversation that we need to be having more as well.
I think also just on that point, when you're, and I'm not saying this is Marvin necessarily, but just generally speaking, he's not the only family member I have that has suffered with severe, not acute, but severe mental health issues. I think when you are in that, as someone suffering from depression or suffering from anxiety or suffering from all these things, your sole focus is to survive. So it's like tunnel vision. I just need to get through today. I just need to get through today. I just need to get through today, which is natural. It's what your body's response is to feeling that way. But the issue with that is you then don't consider anyone else around you. And so although that person is, you want to get that person through what they're going through and support them and be there for them and all those things, being on the outside of that, 10, 12, 13, 15 years, you know, in some cases 50 years, it becomes a lot. And at some point you've got to kind of, I guess, also take accountability for your role in that person's life and mental health and say, actually, is this situation impacting me? And what am I doing to make my situation better? Because there's no point in kind of, even if it's only mentally complaining about you not feeling supported if you then don't go and get that support.
Yeah. So I said earlier, like, I've been following Clout for a couple of months now. I don't know when I started following it, but
when you graduate, Tarek, you've got to reach out and maybe come and work for us.
Do not worry. I will 100% be doing that. Because the reason why, because I don't know how, but I fell in love with everything that Clout is about. For whatever reason, Clout has an aura about it. That, and I know it's not just me, because I've seen comments. I don't know if you've seen comments. I've seen comments who are like, I want to work for Amelia Sordell. I want to work for Clout. How does that make you feel? And why do you think there are some... I genuinely think if I made a Facebook group about people who want to be Clout employees, there would be at least 100 people there. Why do you think that is?
You know, it's interesting, actually. The other day, I was... because we've just launched our new website. And so I was looking at the SEO and stuff. And the number 3 pop searched... thing after clout agency, Amelia Sordell, is clout jobs.
See, there you go.
It's look, I'm not going to take credit for the business that we've built, because I've got enough humility to have hired people far better than me to execute the vision that I have, if you like. But we're just really cool. Like, everyone is different. Everyone has a different vibe. Everyone has different interests. We all have something in common, which is that we want to make this business like a real go of it. Like, we want to have a real go of it. We want to work with great clients. We want to do great work. We want to, just fucking fuck shit up in like the best possible way. Like, we all are just so bought into it. And I think that's really special. And I know as we grow, that culture will change a bit, because invariably it always does as you add more people to the mix. But I think the thing that keeps us on the straight and narrow is we all live, breathe, die by our values, which a lot of companies say they do, but when you ask the CEO what they are, they don't fucking know. So we're win or learn, care deeply, challenge directly. We are mission over ego, which is a really, really important one, because I think it's very easy, particularly when you work up and work on social media, to get lost in the likes and the followers and the, you know, all that bullshit, and focus too much on vanity stuff and not enough on what is the point of this. Like, what are we trying to achieve with those likes? What are we trying to achieve with those, that attention? And we've just changed, actually, we just changed one of them. We had a session the other day on efficiencies, and I said, right, guys, I can sit here and give you a whole PowerPoint prezi on how inefficient you are and how you can improve that. Or we can talk about what it actually means to be a part of Clout and how we can work better to make it happen, basically. And that ended up with a conversation about our values. And we went through every single one of our values and decided that this one, which was we're a bullshit-free zone, didn't actually fit. We were like, that's not us anymore. And so we've changed it to it's not life or death, which is so much more Clout. Because I keep saying, I have this saying internally, and the team laughs. They'll laugh when they hear this. It's like, they'll ask me a question, and I'll be really panicked about it. And my answer is always, is it life or death? And they go, no. I'm like, cool, it's fine then. And it's that whole attitude of like, it's not life or death, guys. We're just selling social media services. We take our work seriously, but we don't take ourselves seriously. Don't kill yourself over trying to do something. It's just work. So yeah, Clout's special, I think. I couldn't really articulate why. I just think the culture we've got is really good, and the people we've got is really good, and the clients we've got are really good. And probably also because we hire our clients for the same values as we hire our candidates from, means that we're all in this mix together, and there's no like sore thumb sticking out that just doesn't align with that.
I think people see that as well. People see, like, so the company I compare Clout to is basically a soon-to-be Gymshark, right?
Oh, yes.
I 100%, like, in terms of yourself with Ben Francis, in terms of, like, just what Gymshark is about. Gymshark is the company that everyone wants to work at, especially my age. Everyone wants to work at Gymshark. 50% Gymshark items, mate, that alone is mental, right? But it's everything else. It's the way Gymshark operates, and it's the way Ben Francis speaks. Like, he, at the beginning, just like yourself, was like, I don't know how to do X, so I'm going to hire someone who knows how to do better. He was not the first CEO of Gymshark. He is now the CEO, which again is something that I think is going to happen with you, because you said you don't see yourself as a CEO. I see you as a CEO. I think you're going to be like, you're going to hire someone else who's going to be the CEO, and then you're going to be like, you know what, nah, I'm going to do it. And I know you think, nah, I'm not going to do it, whatever. I see you doing it. Just like Ben Francis, yeah? And just like Gymshark, right? There's something about you that people see. They don't, like, no, I don't know how much anyone at Clout earns. I don't know the earning potential there, but yeah, I still want to work there. That's mental. We're in a cost of living crisis. That's the first thing I should be thinking about. I'm thinking for whatever reason, there's something about every single employee there. I have post notifications on for every single employee.
I know, everyone in the company knows who you are.
Exactly. Like, well, this is what I'm saying. Like, I'm on it all the time.
We posted a post the other day about the vlog. We were like, look, Tarek's posted about the vlog.
Because it's sick, like, and I just want to know, like, where did that come from? Because where does Ben Francis come from? Where does Amelia Sardell come from? Where you can create a company that's completely different to everyone else's, where candidates actively want to apply without even knowing how much they're going to earn. How did that come about?
I don't even fucking know, to be honest. You know what I think the thing is? So every time we do a performance review, and by performance review, I mean like a quarterly review, we sit down and we go through, right, what did you fucking grade this quarter? What did you suck at? The 360 thing, right? So then I get asked, like, where did I fuck up and where? And then the team also get asked, where is Amelia not doing great? Where is she doing, you know, good? Like, what do you want to see more of, less of, whatever? It really is like a feedback, going back to our values, like, you know, care deeply, challenge directly. That is in every single fucking thing. And the thing that always comes back with the team is like, yeah, the feedback's like, yeah, she's not that great at comms, like, pretty disorganized, turns up late to shit all the time, like, blah, 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 like, classic stuff you've witnessed so far in this podcast. But the thing time and time and time and time and time again that comes up as the thing that they love is that, number one, I'm the best hype person. So, like, if someone does a good job, I am the first person to be like, yes, Meg fucking smashed it, like, shout out Meg, she does something. Almost to the point where I'm like an embarrassing parent, like, you know when you're at sports day and you maybe got like second place and your mum's in the corner like, yes, like, going crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's me. I'm like the really embarrassing sports mum.
I'm the same.
Yeah, I love it. I love hyping people up. It's like my favorite thing to do. Because I didn't have that when I was younger. Not because my parents weren't great. They're fucking awesome. But externally, I didn't have anyone being like, you could do this. So I want to do that for other people. And the second thing that always comes back is that I am so clear on what clout is and what we're going to be, that people are so bought into going on that journey with me. Like, that vision has never changed. It's always been the same thing. And so I think there is an element of stability in that. So although I am chaos and I'm complex and I'm contradictory.
Organized chaos.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Although I am all those things, which normally creative entrepreneurs are, just giant balls of ADHD mess, I'm very, very stable in where the business is going. And I think there's a lot that can be brought in from that as an external candidate. Also, like, this is a real-time MBA you will get working here. Like, it is the most intense, fast, fun, mental workplace, because I've got really high expectations. And hey, my leadership style is not for everyone. My leadership style is, we need to achieve A, go and do it. And if you need help in achieving that, I'll give it to you. But in the first instance, go and fucking figure it out. And that is how we operate. This is why we've ended up having 3 promotions for people that have been in the business less than 12 months, because we aren't told really how to do anything. We're given the basics of how we do stuff operationally, strategically, etc. Everything else, that's on you. You're an adult. Figure it out. We've hired you to do a job. And if it was only a job that you were doing, it wouldn't matter who we hired. We hired you specifically because we know you can help us figure it out. Yeah. It's like the training ground of awesome people.
Mm. And you know what? Sort of one thing that I didn't mention is, I think it's the little things that you're doing as well. It's like, so I saw, you know, the thing with the accountant, that was mental for me. Like, for you, I don't know how much that cost you, but it would probably cost you relatively...
It wasn't insignificant.
Exactly. Like... But that the impact that has on everyone else, because that's something that no other employer does. We don't even do it in school properly. We don't teach about finances. And yet you've got an employee that you've got a leader who's doing that. Again, for everyone else, we all look at it and we go, that's sick. Like, I'd love that at my workplace or whatever. I want to sort of, I know you said you only had a few minutes, so I want to ask you just a few more quick questions. Based on sort of what you're doing with clout, what does the world of work look like in the future?
What does the world of work look like in the future? It's interesting. I was having this conversation with the CEO earlier, and I really do think freelancers are going to become the norm. I think companies will be built up of, yes, employees. You always need employees because that's the bones of a business. But will be supplemented with highly skilled freelancers. So, for example, I don't think you'll have in-house graphic designers anymore. I don't think you'll probably have in-house videographers anymore. I think they'll all be freelanced in the future, which gives huge opportunities to people across the world, right? It's global distribution of wealth then. You could have a Cambodian graphic designer doing work on a Barclays campaign in London and then be getting paid a London wage. How awesome is that? You're leveling up an entire fucking economy by leveling out the global opportunity spectrum. But yeah, I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing is we're going to return to the office and we're going to return to suits and boots. I think people have this hilariously naive attitude at the minute to, oh, why would we want to be in an office? And why would we want to wear a dress code and all this kind of stuff? And hey, look, I'm sitting here in Jordans and a freaking white T-shirt and jeans. Like, that's my...
Jordans, someone's doing well for themselves. Jeez.
My pink, it has to be pink. Pink and green Jordans, but like, that's my uniform, right? That's what I put on to feel like Amelia Sordell, the owner of Clout, each day. There is a reason why I put that uniform on each day, and that's because it makes me feel a specific way and it makes me feel like I'm ready to get shit done. You cannot, to my opinion, operate in a high performance environment dressed like a fucking slob. Which means that people are going to have to start either working from home and dressing how they feel most confident, is what is the wording that I always say. Not comfortable, because I don't want you to be comfortable, you're at work. Confident, and do that from home. Or they come into an office and boss the shit out of their outfit, boss the shit out of their day, meet with amazing people, have those awesome little water cooler moments that we never get to have over Zoom and all that stuff. I'm convinced, right, fucking convinced, that in 10 years' time, we're going to have this trend. It might even be less than that, but it's going to have this trend where the younger generation who grew up in their careers through the pandemic go, guys, got a great idea. And everyone's like, what great idea have we got? And they go, let's create these spaces where everyone can come and work together called offices. And everyone's like, oh, that is such a good idea. Let's all meet together and then we can come in every day and do this every day. And they're going to be like, wow, guys, super innovative. And then someone's going to go, you know what's even better? And they're going to go, what? And they're going to go, imagine if we all dressed the same so we were just all equal. And they're going to go, wow, that's the best idea ever. I can't believe you come up with that. It will all come back around. Mm. People are people. We are the top of the fucking food chain because we are social beings that need to be together, that enjoy being together. And yeah, the commute's kind of annoying. And yeah, you don't really want to be stuck in a sweaty train each day. But in the scheme of things, is it worth it? I think it is.
No, yeah, 100% agree. The frustrating thing about this podcast is I was hoping there'd be stuff that we'd disagree on that we could talk about. Just because I was scared that it'll be like every other podcast. Because I want to create something that the other person, the guest enjoys and that I enjoy. Like, I've already heard everything about personal branding from you on other podcasts. I don't know everything, obviously. But, like, I've heard you talk about personal branding and your journey, recruitment, etc. Finley and Jones, or whatever they're called. Like, everything. I've genuinely just done that much research. So I didn't want to hear that, but I'm
honored, by the way, that you dug that much in. Like,
honestly, really... I've heard your voice. I put you on double speed so I can get through more podcasts. So it's just been like back to back to back episodes.
I have an annoying voice, so I apologize.
No, it's fine. it's been an absolute pleasure to sit with you, Amelia. I've wanted to do this for a long, long time. Couldn't believe when your PA got back to me and said, "Yeah, that's fine. We'll do a podcast." I was like, "Bloody hell!" Amelia Sardell said yes. It was mental at the time. So I want to finish off with asking you one final question. It's the question I ask every single guest that comes on here. I started this podcast. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. COVID ruined my first year of uni. I was stressing out, and I feel like a lot of people feel the same way, that they don't know what they want to do with their life at 20 years old. So if you could go back and speak to your 20-year-old self and give them one, so just say one thing, what would it be?
Just one.
Just one thing.
Just fucking do it.
And that is it for this week's episode of the Me, Myself, and Hopefully You podcast. It's been a long time since the previous episode, but I want to get back into the consistency and start putting out more episodes because I'm recording them. I just can't be bothered editing them, but hopefully I can get back on it. I will get back on it because next week I'll be sitting down and talking with an ex-professional footballer who has the fourth most amount of clean sheets for Man United, played for England alongside Peter Shilton, no less, and in fact was played under Sir Alex Ferguson in his first ever year at United, which is mental. So if you're into football, or maybe even if you're not, then make sure you check that episode out. It'll be coming out on Sunday, this Sunday. But other than that, thank you so much. Have a great week. Until next time.